liquor store and restaurant, 211, code 3. All units, the southeast corner of...
Come on, Ben, let's roll. When we got to the liquor store and restaurant at Broadway and East 3rd, Ben and I knew for certain that Kosky and Mishikoff were back in the city and working hard. Their M.O. matched down to almost the smallest detail. We put a call through to communications and the entire central division was alerted. Then we called Chief Backstrand and told him the news. He assigned a special detail from the Metropolitan Unit to patrol the area until further notice. But at 9:23 p.m., before they pulled out of the police garage, the Blitz Bandits added two more liquor stores and one more restaurant to their list of victims. Early the next morning, Ben and I met with Chief Backstrand in his office.
You got a make on that third man yet?
We ran his description through R&I early this morning, Ed. Closest candidate's a guy by the name of Julian Brock, done time here in New York.
Any tie-up with Kosky or Mishikoff?
Mama Sheet says he knows Kosky pretty well.
And that's good enough. Now, how do you think you're going to get these thieves?
We've got the alert out, Chief. Special detail from Metropolitan Division's been brief. Communications all set.
All right, here's a tip for you. Tell them in if there's a hold-up call that only the car in the area of the hold-up will handle it. These thieves are no amateurs. Let me try some decoy trick. Tell the men to stay in the area they're assigned to until they receive a call. Jake?
We'll take care of it, Ed. You're going to be on hand tonight?
And when do you figure on starting?
We'll have the full detail out by 6:30.
Play it safe and start at 4. Why chance missing him?
At 3:30 that afternoon, we left the police garage with the special detail from Metropolitan Division and we started to cruise the central area. We weren't looking for any action the first few hours, and we didn't get any. The 5 o'clock traffic in the downtown area was heavy as usual.
Hope that gang holds off till after 6. We couldn't get out of this traffic if our lives depended on it.
Well, we'd probably do better on foot if it wasn't for radio contact.
Control 4 to 80K. Control 4 to 80K, your location.
Get it, will you, Joe?
Yeah, wait till I get the mic. 80K to Control 4. 80K to Control 4. Our location on Spring Street between 2nd and 3rd.
80K, stand by. 80K, call your office code 2. Call your office code 2, KMA
367. 80K to Control 4, Roger, KMA 367.
Yeah, now what do I do for a parking space?
You know, you're lucky. That guy up ahead there, he's pulling out.
Good, that hasn't happened to me in 6 months.
Okay, hold on, Ben. I'll be back in a minute.
Yeah.
City Hall.
2511.
2511.
Robbery, Chandler.
This is Friday, Bill. You want us?
Yeah, just a minute, Joe. Chief wants to talk to you. Hello, Friday.
Yeah, Ed.
Cruiser car just brought in a guy answering the description of Mario Kosky.
Yeah?
Get over here right away and question the guy. If it is Kosky, we can all go home early.
Ben and I went back to the office and questioned the man who gave his name as Conrad Larkin. He was Kosky's approximate height and weight, same color hair, same color eyes. The resemblance to Kosky's picture was evident. We questioned him thoroughly about the Blitz robberies, and then we checked out his fingerprints. The coincidence was hard to overlook, but we were satisfied. The man was not Mario Kosky. There was a phone message on my desk to call Hank's wife. I called her, and then we checked with Chief Backstrand again and started for the police garage. It was 6:10.
Hey, Ben, Joe, wait a minute, will you?
Oh, hi, Hank. What's all the excitement?
I heard about those jobs last night, the Blitz gang. How about tagging along tonight?
What's the stare?
You suit yourself, Hank. When are you due home for dinner?
I told the wife I'd eat out tonight.
You sure you're not due home for dinner?
No, not tonight, Joe. Did you have any luck yet?
Not so far, Hank. Maybe later on tonight.
Come on, here's the garage.
How close did you come to the gang last night?
Not close enough. Two steps ahead of us all the way.
They sure must work fast. 5 jobs in a row.
All right, Hank, let's don't rub it in, huh? Hey, Ben, watch it, will you?
Yeah. Woman driver.
How about it, Joe? You think I can make the outfit?
You talk to Ed Backstrand. He might get you a transfer after a while.
Yeah, I might try it. Joe, look across the street. There's a guy coming out of the bar.
Where?
In front of the bar. He's standing there. Guy in the dark coat, you see?
Yeah. 2 other guys behind him.
Who is he?
I can't be sure. Ben, you better pull up.
Kosky looks just like his picture.
All right. Come on. All right, hold it, mister. We want to talk to you.
Run for it, Al Copper!
Watch it, Joe!
Hank, get down! Get down!
Two of them down, Ben.
Bud and one up alley. Let's go.
Did they get Hank?
Yeah.
All right, hold it right here. All right, Kosky, throw out your gun and come out with your hands up. All right, let's return the fire. Come on.
He had his chance.
Yeah. Grab his gun. Let's get back to Hank. Mm. Did you get the guns from the other two?
Yeah, they're dead. Hank got them both.
All right, one side, please. Officer, did you call an ambulance?
Yeah, they're on their way.
Get Come on, Ben. There. One side, please. Will you let us through? Hank, how you doing?
That's a good job.
Ben, will you get the crowd black? Give him some air.
Would you just move back?
All right, go ahead.
Joe,
All right, easy, Hank. They'll be here in a minute. Hank? Hank?
How's it going, Joe? Gone?
Yeah, come on.
What have you got, Joe?
Phone message from Hank's wife.
For you?
Yeah.
You returned the call?
Before we left the office.
Who was it?
She wanted me to remind Hank. He was due home for dinner at 7 o'clock.
The story you have just heard is true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
You have just heard the 12th in a new series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet is furnished by the Los Angeles Police Department.
Tonight's program is dedicated to Patrolman James Frank Goggin of the Cleveland Police Department, who on the morning of January 13, 1939, gave his life so that yours might be more secure.
Dragnet came to you from Los Angeles. If you enjoyed tonight's production of Dragnet, you'll want to listen to Richard Diamond, private detective, as played by the screen's romantic tough guy, Dick Powell, heard Saturday on most of these NBC stations. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
Yeah, sure. You know what always cracks me up? Well, a lot of shit cracks me up about that show, but one of the number one things that makes me laugh is like how horseshit most of that is, like dedicated to fucking Bill Dead Guy 10 years before this fucking thing ever came out. As if, you know, god damn, like there's a thing I like about propaganda, because at least it's pretty honest. Like it's horseshit, but it's honest horseshit, you know, kind of like the president, right? You know, it's horseshit, but he believes that bullshit. Anyway, really funny thing to me about Dragnet is like, all right, like for the first year or something, it's like 48, 49 or whatever, like the first 25 episodes or 24, I guess, they have like names like Jade Thumb Rings, Garbage Chute, 22 Rifle for Christmas. But then, which is awesome, it's like their annual Christmas episode. They'll just play fucking 22 Rifle for Christmas, which is amazing. But at some point around episode 25, that motherfucker got real lazy and just put the word big in front of everything. So you go down, it's like Big Escape, Big Man Part 2, Big Smoke, Big Want, Big Laugh, Big Impossible, Big Boys, Big Gangster, Big Watch, Big Trial, Big Job, Big Carney, Big Joke, Big False Move, Big Revolt, Big Ham, Big Bop, Big Lift, Big Cab, Big Slip, Big Bomb, Big Frame, Big Grab, Big Poison, Big Check, Big Odd, Big Brink, Big Little Jesus, Big Listen, Big Switch, Big Bill, Big Bid, Big Meat, Big Grandma, Big Mother, Big Parrot, Big Betty, Big TV, Big Cup, Big Saw, Big Note, Big Net, Big Lift, Big Stop, Big Look, Big Help, Big Cast, Big Children, Big Tomato, Big Ben, Big Sour, Big Mike, Big Lens, Big Underground, Big Mug, Big Slug, Big Hat, Big Gap, Big Red Part 2, Big Juvenile Division, Big Streetcar, Big big show, big grab, big limp, big fall guy, big housemaid, big test, big paper, big impression, big fellow, and the final one is big close, and they're fucking another 275 or some shit I didn't read. Big Bobo, big genius. That's pretty fucking cool, man. And I know it's all horseshit, and it's probably the antithesis of everything that's on this fucking radio show, but god damn it, is it funny to me. Oh, man. Big fucking streetcar. Big revision. Big squealer. Oh, man. Anyway, this is Mini Radio, not FM. There's a song I've been wanting to fucking play for a while on here. And I don't know what's wrong with me, why I don't just fucking find it and play it. But you know me, man. Well, no, you don't know me, but you do know this much. I be thinking. And I like finding new different fun songs and stuff, and you know, it's part of the thing. I was also thinking about all those poor fuckers in the Caribbean right now, because I used to squat for a little while, and I was wondering how much goddamn squatting's got to be going on. There's one island down there, like, it's either, it's like Antigua and, like, Barbados. Or, it's not Barbados, but it's some other island like that. Fucking thing has been occupied at least by somebody over the last, what is it? How many years? 300? First time that whole island is just nobody. It's just rats and sewage and bugs. Like, goddamn. But, you know, in between all that shit, somebody's got to be fucking squatting somewhere, you know? So I'm just thinking about that. I used to do that in Richmond, California. Had to do it a couple of times, which not fun. Not fun at all. But, you know. You gotta do what you gotta do when you ain't got shit. Like, I remember one place I was at. Both of them, my man Rodney found me. And it was really kind of wild. Like, it's fucking creepy. I was working full time at this place, right? But I never made enough to do, like, the deposit and, you know, and first month. So the whole time I was just sitting there just going like, motherfucker, I am never going to get out of this shit. But luckily I worked with somebody who eventually just said, fuck it. You know, I got a big enough place. You can stay over here. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, no one gives a fuck, George. Yeah, I know I do. But this is a cool band that I didn't find them, but I found them in my life. And, they're really cool. They're called the Barberettes, and they are the coolest. I was going to play their cover. Well, maybe I will, but, there's one that they did that's just so especially great that they sang on a rooftop called Fairy Tale, and eventually I'm going to find it on here, but it's so weird. Here it is. Perfect. Let's see if we can do this without fucking. Yep. with Japanese ladies, I believe, and it's a pretty cool tune, and I was going to play another one. They have the worst fucking name to look up ever, but they're really cool, and I half-ass remember this from being a kid, but but now it's easy to find their stuff now because it's all online. People have no idea how lucky you guys are. Man, motherfucker, I used to, oh God, video search in Miami, shit like that, just bootleg shit all the time. Anyway, this is like a fucking awesome song. It's called How to Pick Up Girls by the Little Girls. is that the worst fucking title? But here we go. You should check out the video. It's on YouTube, obviously, and it's really cool. Here we go. That's about all that is. Fuck. Yeah, that's me fucking up because I got excited. Oh, man. Anyway, this is another great tune by another great fucking band. And I got to see these guys a couple of times. They're called The Retards. This is off Teenage Hate. Maybe the best fucking rock record ever? I don't know. It's up there. I like The Dwarves and shit like that, too. Their first record is really good. But this is... God, I haven't listened to this in so long.
I'm so glad.
Stray tune. Oh, man. God damn it. Just, I was thinking about, God damn, there's so many great fucking songs. Wow, George. You really nailed the shit out of that. Yup, derpy derper. Oh, man. God damn it. One of my favorite groups ever is still, I think I figured out exactly kind of like what I really, really like in music. I like something with a cool fucking rhythm. Like, this is best case scenario, because I really like everything from, like, I was one of the early proponents of fucking no wave, but, like, I like dissonance, I like succinctness, I like power, and I like rhythm, generally, you know? I really don't give a fuck what you're talking about, but if you're singing something cool, even better, because it's so funny. Zach and I were talking about this the other day, how it's funny that a lot of, like, maybe the most powerful thing we do as humans is music, like, as far as affecting other people. Like, it's beyond movies and all that other shit, you know, or even words, really, just pure music. And he was moaning the fact that it's sad that, like, in that forum, lyrically, it's like, it's thin shit. And that's very fucking true. And one of the funniest things, it was like, yeah, you're right. You're right. Well, you know, I can't help but agree, because, like, even, let's say, the best, quote unquote, you know, like, singers, songwriters and shit, it's still really thin, because, you know, you're trying to pack everything in 2.5 minutes. Good luck saying anything. You see, but that's weird. A comedian can say a whole hell of a lot of shit in 2.5 minutes. 2.5 minutes is a long time sometimes if you're standing on stage. But for some reason, it's like, seems to be absolutely impossible to actually make. Now, we had to make a subgenre, because rap music is one of the few. And, you know, actually some fucking blues, you can make impressive lyrical statements in a very short amount of time. But about all the other fucking music, it's generally guys trying to either get laid, tell you how they get laid, or, like, money, or it's either money or sex, or weirdly sports, right? But anyway, so I was just gonna play, this is, I think, the first song I ever heard by this group.
How do you do?
And it's still one of the best fucking bands ever, maybe.
Mr. Carl Lemley Field,
certainly top 10.
It would be a little unkind to present this picture without just a word of friendly warning. We are about to unfold the story of Frankenstein.
Get the fuck out of here.
A man of science.
Heading up to the park.
Who sought to create a man after his own image, without reckoning upon God. It is one of the strangest tales ever told. It deals with the two great mysteries of creation, life and death. I think it will thrill you. It may shock you. It might even horrify you. So if any of you feel that you do not care to subject your nerves to such a strain,
a great fucking movie,
now is your chance to, well, we warned you.
I need your soul.
Fucking, I love the goddamn Misfits. Oh, all right. Weird fact. This thing I'm going to, the comedy day in the park, is actually, I don't know, what is it? What fucking month it is? September? We're getting backwards. Thing is exactly, like almost exactly 3 months older than I, or younger than me. I'm older than this goddamn thing that I'm going to. Not that it's depressing or anything, but depressing is thinking about Derek Jeter growing up in the same town as me, being about 2 years older than me, and fucking... Anyway. Nothing like retiring and... Anyway. A zillionaire, beloved by, like, the biggest, most influential-ish city in America. Except for music. Weirdly enough, my state, Michigan, has had more... influential, cooler, more rockin' band like that has ever come out of this fucking place, let alone New York. It's fucked up. If you consider just regular rock and you take out like the what's their name? The Ramones and even the New York Dolls, they're maybe my favorite fucking rock band, but they're not, like, known, really. So, if you take, like, those two out, you're really stuck with the Brill Building, which would be probably the best shit to ever come out of New York. Like, Brill and doo-wop, you know? You go to Michigan, you got fucking Funkadelic, you got the Stooges, you got Motown, you just go on all day from Seeger to fucking Bob Seeger. All right, anyway. I'm just rambling now for no particular reason, and I'm going over my time. So, I think they sold that art on the wall. That's fucking cool. Go Ricky Watts. All right. Quit fucking around, George. All right. Good night. MiniRadio.fm. Oh, yeah. Let's play some goddamn interstitials. Breaker. Breaker 1-9.
Oh. Well, gather around me, sea dogs, and get aboard me pirate ship as we set sail for the seas of MutinyRadio.fm. From there, you can captain your own pirate ship as you sail through over 44 different shows for all of your listening pleasures. They've got live comedy to small business advice, LGBTQ-friendly to sports, vinyl to gutter punk. MutinyRadio.fm has the best programming the internet ocean has to offer you. I bet my peg leg on it, or I ain't Scurvy Shitface McRat. Are you tired of swimming through a sea of podcasts? Are ye on a raft without a paddle? Well, gather around me, sea dogs, and get aboard me pirate ship as we set sail for the seas of MutinyRadio.fm. From there, you can captain your own pirate ship as you sail through over 44 different shows for all of your listening pleasures. They've got live comedy to small business advice, LGBTQ-friendly to sports, vinyl to gutter punk. MutinyRadio.fm has the best programming the internet ocean has to offer you. I bet my peg leg on it, or I ain't Scurvy Shitface McRat.
an underground space for an event? Look no further than MutinyRadio.fm. Our 30-seat flexible space can accommodate your acoustic band, birthday party, comedy show, dance party, karaoke super fun, theater event, fundraiser. If you think it, we can do it. You run the door and promotion, we run the sound, space, and podcast. Rentals available Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday from 8 to 10 at Mutiny Radio FM's performance space at 2781 21st Street in the Deep Mission at 21st in Florida. Contact Pam at pamsadai@hotmail.com for more options and booking dates. Incredible socialist prices so you can be creative in a free speech space without breaking the bank. That's Mutiny Radio Rentals every Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday from 8 to 10. Book your event now.
Trying to hurt me, but boy, how it burns me whenever she touched me. And oh, I feel so lucky. Oh.
Want to spend a summer Sunday laughing?
Every 2 minutes, an American is sexually assaulted. Take action today. Join RAIN in the fight against sexual violence and volunteer in your local community. Visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org today to find out how you can make a difference.
This public service announcement is brought to you by your friends at Mutiny Radio.
I'm James Marsters.
I'm Christine Lottie.
I'm Martin Jarvis.
I'm Jill Gascoigne.
This is Rosalind Ayres.
This is LA Theatre Works.
I'm Susan Lowenberg.
From My Man Godfrey and Mr. Belvedere to Alfred Pennyworth and Figaro, we're all familiar with the resourceful servants of stage and screen. But none have endured in the public imagination like Jeeves, the right-hand man to the hapless socialite Bertie Wooster. This week, we'll hear one of the earliest Jeeves and Wooster adventures, The Code of the Woosters, adapted from the original P.G. Wodehouse novel by Mark Richard. This week on L.A. Theater Works. In Hour One of The Code of the Woosters, Bertie Wooster is on a mission from his beloved Aunt Dahlia.
I only telephoned to tell you to go to an antique shop in the Brompton Road and sneer at a cow creamer.
Do what? To a what?
When he runs afoul of the amateur dictator, Roderick Spode.
It was as if nature had intended to make a gorilla and had changed its mind at the last moment.
And when Spode is convinced that he has Wooster's number...
If the thing disappears, I shall know where it's gone, and I shall immediately beat you to a jelly. To a jelly.
The ever-resourceful Jeeves comes to the rescue.
It would greatly lessen Mr. Spode's potentiality for evil if you were to inform him that you know about Eulalie, sir.
Eulalie?
Eulalie, sir.
And now, Hour 2 of The Code of the Woosters by P.G. Wodehouse, starring Mark Richard as Bertie Wooster and Martin Jarvis as Jeeves. Produced by L.A. Theatre Works.
1 minute, Spode. It may interest you to learn that I know all about Eulalie.
What? Do you?
I do.
You will keep it to yourself, won't you, Wooster?
Provided we have no more of these extraordinary exhibitions.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Wooster. Oh, did I rumple your coat? I'm so sorry. I forgot myself. It shan't happen again.
Is it better not? I shall be very sharp on that sort of thing in the future, Spode.
Yeah, I know. I was wrong.
You bet you were wrong, calling me a miserable worm.
Yeah, I'm sorry I called you a miserable worm, Wooster. I spoke without thinking.
Always think, Spode. Yes. That is all. You may withdraw.
Yes, thank you. Good night, Wooster.
Good night, Spode.
Yes, I'm so very sorry.
Well, I'll be... What was all that about? Who is this Eulalie?
Only Jeeves knows, and club rules forbid him to divulge. But one can fill in the picture for oneself, I think, Aunt Delia. The trusting girl who learned too late that men betray. The little bundle, the last mournful walk to the riverbank. The splash, the bubbling cry. I fancy so, don't you?
Good old blackmail, you can't beat it. I've always said so. Do you realize realize what this means? Now that you've got the goods on Spode, you can stroll down and sneak that cow creamer tonight.
Now, there, if you'll excuse my saying so, you are talking like a fathead. Stiffy still has that notebook, and before any steps can be taken towards the cow creamer, I have got to get it back. Only by showing that notebook to Madeline can Gussie prove that his motive in pinching Stiffy's legs was pure. And only if he effects a reconciliation with the Bassett can I avoid the peril of marrying her myself. I am going to search Stiffy's room.
What's the good of that? Wherever it is, you can be jolly sure it's carefully hidden. I'm going to go and start thinking of something sensible.
Ah, Jeeves, I would like to pay you stately tribute on the accuracy of your information, Ray Spode. Spode Quay Menace. Is it Quay, Jeeves?
Yes, sir, quite correct.
I thought so. Well, Spode Quay Menace is a spent egg.
That is most gratifying, sir.
Most. However, this notebook must be re-snitched from young Stiffy. Aunt Delia sees no hope, but I have just come upon a significant passage in the thriller I have been reading. Note this carefully, Jeeves. The detective, referring to some bounders who've just ransacked a girl's room, says, "Amateurs, Postlethwaite, rank amateurs. They never tried the top of the cupboard, and any experienced crook knows it is a woman's favorite hiding place." You see the profound significance of that, Jeeves?
If I interpret you right, sir, you're suggesting that the notebook may be concealed on the top of the cupboard in Miss Bing's room.
That detective is no fool, Jeeves. Stiffy's gone to attend old Stinker's slide lecture on the Holy Land. The coast is clear. Gird up your loins, Jeeves, and accompany me.
Well, really, sir.
Jeeves, I have had occasion to rebuke you before for this habit of saying, "Well, really, sir," in a soupy sort of voice when I indicate a strategic line of action. Think feudally, Jeeves.
Very well, sir.
Shortly, we were in Stiffy's room, and I was just looking about me when my meditations were broken by an odd sort of gargling noise, which, to cut a long story short, proved to proceed from the larynx of the dog Bartholomew. Come on, Jeeves! At the exact moment when I soared like an eagle onto the chest of drawers, Jeeves was skimming like a swallow onto the top of the cupboard.
The book does not appear to be on top of the cupboard, as you suspected, sir.
Blast the book, Jeeves. What about this dog?
Yes, sir.
What do you mean, yes, sir?
Well, I was endeavoring to convey that I appreciate the point you have raised, sir. The animal's unexpected appearance unquestionably raises a problem.
Have you no ideas, Jeeves? We're trapped. What is required here is action. Sharp, decisive action.
Yes, sir.
I would advise seeing what you can do with a sheet.
A sheet, sir?
I think that if you were to make a sudden spring, you could snatch up a sheet and roll him up in it.
Yes, sir.
There are some on the bed.
Yes, sir. I can see them, sir. On the bed, sir.
Well, are you going to make a sudden spring?
No, sir.
A rather stiff silence followed Jeeves' nolle pro sequi.
Hello, Bertie. Hello, Jeeves.
Hello, Stiffy. Well, I suppose you're surprised to see us up here.
Not really. Have you been looking for that book?
Why, yes, that's right. Though, as a matter of fact, we were somewhat impeded by the bow wow. I was keeping it light, you notice. Always the best way on these occasions. Stiffy, would it be asking too much of you to attach a stout lead to his collar, thus making the world safe for democracy?
Yes, it would.
Surely you wish to save the lives of two fellow creatures?
Not if they're men. I loathe all men.
Back early, aren't you?
The lecture was off. Harold dropped the slides and broke them.
What made him do that?
He had a shock when I broke off our engagement.
What?
Yes. I asked him when he was going to pinch Eustace Oates' helmet, and he said that he'd been wrestling with his conscience, but that it simply wouldn't hear of him pinching helmets, so it was all off. Well, so is our engagement, I said, and he dropped the coloured slides of the Holy Land, and I came away. And I consider that I've had a very lucky escape. If he is the sort of man who is going to refuse me every little thing I ask, I'm glad I found out in time.
Well,
That's too bad. The heart bleeds, hey, Jeeves?
Distinctly, isn't it?
Yes, by Jove, it bleeds profusely. However, as you will no longer have any use for that notebook, how about handing it over?
It isn't here. I put it in the... Hello? What's that on the balcony? Harold, what do you want?
Stiffy, can I come in?
No, you can't.
But I've brought you something.
Harold, you angel lamb, you haven't pinched Oates' helmet after all, have you?
Yes, I have.
Oh, Harold, my dream of joy.
Stiffy, my lord! Oof!
While I had not seen old Stinker Pinker since our Oxford days, the manner in which he now tripped over a rug and into an occasional table showed me that this was indeed the same galumphing man who had always been constitutionally incapable of walking through the great Gobi Desert without knocking something over.
Here it is, the helmet. Also your gloves, or one of them. I can't seem to find the other. Stiffy, don't look now, but is there something on top of that chest of drawers?
Oh, yes. That's Bertie Wooster. And that's Bertie's man, Jeeves, on top of the cupboard.
How do you do, sir?
Bartholomew, you can come down now. I've got him on the lead.
Thank you, miss. If I may help you, sir.
Thank you, Jeeves.
That's it, sir.
Well, what ho, Stinker. I hear you're a curate now.
Yes, that's right.
How are the souls?
Oh, fine. Thanks. Oh, if the infant's Bible class should hear of this helmet business.
Oh, if it upsets you, darling, I'll put it away in this drawer. There. But you must tell me what happened. Did you creep behind him like a leopard?
No doubt you trailed him with unremitting snakiness, eh, Stinker?
I had gone for a walk to think things over, and suddenly, there he was, leaning against a stile.
I hope that you remember to give the forward shove before the upwards lift.
It wasn't necessary. The helmet was sitting on the ground. I just crept up and grabbed it.
Off the ground? Not quite playing the game, Stinker.
Yes, it was. I call it very clever of him.
At the Drones Club, we hold strong views on these things. There is a right way and a wrong way. How do you feel about it, Jeeves?
I scarcely think it would be fitting for me to offer an opinion, sir.
No, and it jolly well isn't fitting for you two either, you pie-faced Bertie Wooster, considering that you got collared and hauled up to grovel before Uncle Watkin when you tried it.
I did not grovel to the
Bertie,
old disease.
Bertie, will you kindly put a sock in it?
I'm sorry, but I cannot alter my opinion that Stinker did not play to the rules.
And I cannot alter my opinion that you have no business in my bedroom.
I most certainly do. I came here
Yes. Bertie came to borrow a book, darling, but I can't let him have it just yet. I have not finished with it myself. By the way, Bertie will be delighted to help us with the cow creamer.
Oh, you won't mind me hitting you on the nose?
Oh, yes, of course he
will. You see, we must have blood. Blood is of the essence. When would you feel like doing it, Bertie?
He feels like doing it tonight. Be waiting outside at midnight, darling. Midnight will suit you, Bertie. Yes, Bertie says it will suit him splendidly. So that's all settled. And now, you really must be going, precious. Good night, darling.
Good night, darling.
Good night, darling.
Good night, darling.
I am shocked, Jeeves.
Sir?
I am pretty broad-minded, but this has shocked me, that Harold Pinker, a clerk in holy orders, should countenance this behaviour appalls me. He knows she's blackmailing me with that book. A pretty example he sets for his infant's Bible class.
I think you do the gentleman an injustice, sir.
Eh?
Yes, I'm convinced that he does not know about the notebook, sir. When you were about to mention it, Miss Bing's manner betrayed embarrassment. She feared lest Mr. Pinker, learning the facts, should compel her to make restitution.
Good night, Donald.
Oh, Harold fell off the ladder. Well, Betty, tonight's the night.
Not so fast, young Stiffy. I want that notebook, and I want it immediately, without any backchat.
Ha, jolly ha.
Ha, jolly ha to you, young Stiffy, with knobs on. I am convinced that you have not told Stinker the facts behind my cooperation. If I don't get that notebook now, I shall go to old Stinker, and I expect he will compel you to make... What was it, Jeeves?
Restitution, sir.
Thank you, Jeeves.
I don't know what you mean.
I should have thought that my meaning was perfectly clear. All right. toodaloo. I'm off to find old Stinker.
No, don't. You mustn't. Oh, Bertie, darling. Of course I didn't tell Harold about the book. He would have said it was a rotten trick, and of course it was. But you are going to help us, aren't you?
I am not.
Well, I do think you might.
I dare say you do, but I won't.
Oh, I wish I were dead.
But Stiffy, Stiffy, old girl, use the bean. Your blasted uncle is watching my every move, and I have already told you that Stinker is not the man for the job. And even if he did manage it, what ensues? Stinker strolls in all over blood, says he hit the marauder on the nose. Ah, says your uncle, everybody keep your eyes skinned for a bird with a swollen nose. And the first thing he sees is me with a beezer twice the proper size.
I wonder if I might suggest an alternative, sir.
Jeeves, you don't mean that you found a formula?
Jeeves, have you really?
I think so, sir. Miss?
Well, you certainly are the most wonderful woolly barlamb that ever stepped.
Oh, thank you, Miss Bing. Approaching the matter from a psychological angle, the idea I have in mind is to take advantage of Sir Watkin's attitude towards Mr. Wooster. Sir Watkin does not like you, sir.
I don't like him.
No, sir, but the important thing is that he would sustain a severe shock were you to inform him that you and Miss Bing were betrothed.
What? I mean, all right for a laugh, of course.
He would hit the ceiling.
Exactly, miss. A very colourful piece of imagery.
Oh.
If it were then revealed that you were in fact betrothed to Mr. Pinker, I think his overwhelming relief would cause him to look with a kindly eye on your union with that gentleman.
Personally, I have never heard anything so potty in my life.
Why, Jeeves, that's marvellous. It couldn't fail. Jeeves, you really are a specific dream rabbit.
I will now take that book, Stiffy.
You toddle off and speak to Uncle Watkin. Then we'll talk.
I will toddle off, but speak to him?
No.
You wouldn't fail me, would you?
I would. I would fail you like Billy-O.
Well, don't you like the scheme?
I do not. I consider that Jeeves' idea marks the absolute zero in human goofiness. The book, if you please, or I go to old Stinker and tell him all.
All right, do. And before you get within a mile of him, I shall be up in the library reading Gussie's notebook to Uncle Watkin.
I had overlooked this contingency completely.
So, there you are. Now, how about it?
But, Stiffy, you can't subject me to this fearful ordeal.
Yes, I can.
Oh. Very well, then. I will go to him.
Yikes! Tally-ho!
I found old Bassett in conference with Constable Oates.
Yes, Mr. Wooster.
could I speak to you for a moment?
Speak to me? Why, yes, yes, that is, as you really must. Pray take a seat. Well, it's, you know what I wish you to do, and regarding the other matter, I will look into it very closely, bearing in mind what you have told me of your suspicions.
Yes, sir. Very good, Sir Watkin.
That was Constable Oates, Mr. Wooster. You know him.
I saw him this afternoon.
Not since then?
No.
You were missed in the drawing room after dinner, Mr. Wooster.
Sorry. I had a bit of a headache and ensconced myself in my room.
Odd. My daughter Madeline tells me she went twice to your room after dinner, but found it unoccupied.
Oh, really? Wasn't I there?
You were not.
I suppose I must have been somewhere else.
Yes, the same thought had occurred to me. Somebody stole Constable Oates' helmet tonight.
Oh, yes?
Yes, unfortunately, he was not able to see the miscreant.
No?
No, his back was turned.
Dash difficult, of course, to see miscreants if your back's turned.
Yes.
Yes. A sudden alarm for old Stinker's well-being swept over me. I say, what do you think the miscreant, if discovered, would get? You find me £5.
Yes. However, the outrage for which you were brought up was perpetrated on the night of the Oxford and Cambridge boat race, when a certain license is traditionally granted by the authorities. In this case, there are no such extenuating circumstances.
You don't mean it would be the chokey?
The answer to your question, Mr. Wooster, is in the affirmative.
Poor old Stinker. Nothing retards a curate's advancement more surely than a spell in the jug.
Well, Mr. Wooster, tell me what brings you here.
Oh, have you ever thought about love, Sir Watkin?
I beg your pardon?
About love.
I wonder if you've ever noticed a rather rummy thing about it, viz, that it is everywhere. You can't get away from it. I mean, wherever you go, there it is, buzzing along. Take newts, for instance.
Are you quite well, Mr. Worcester?
Oh, fine, thanks. As I was saying, you wouldn't think it, but Gussie Finknottle tells me that newts get it right up their noses in mating season. Starfish, too. Also, undersea worms.
Mr. Worcester!
And even ribbon-like seaweed. That surprises you, eh? It did me. But Gussie assures me it is so. Now, just where a bit of ribbon-like seaweed thinks it's going to get by pressing its suit is more than I can tell you. But at the full moon, it hears the voice of love, all right, and is up and doing with the best of them. Now, if that's how it affects seaweed, you can't very well blame a chap like me for feeling the impulse, can you?
I'm afraid, Mr. Worcester.
Well, can you? I mean, hey, what?
Mr. Worcester, I have not the remotest notion of what you are talking about.
Sir Watkin, I am talking about me and Stiffy.
My niece?
That's right. I want to marry young Stiffy. She wants to marry me. I have the honor to ask you for your niece's hand. There was no question of its being value for money. He came out of his chair like a rocketing pheasant and now sank back again.
Oh, my God.
He seemed to have aged quite a lot.
But I was not aware that you knew my niece.
Oh, hello, Bertie. I didn't know you were here. Have you and Uncle Watkin been having a nice talk?
Old Bassett came out of his coma and uttered a sound like the death rattle of a dying duck.
Mr. Worcester has just informed me that he wishes to marry you.
Oh, Bertie, dear, I'm terribly sorry. I'm afraid it's impossible. You see, I love another. The most wonderful man in the world, Harold Pinker, the curate.
What? You love the curate?
You know that vicarage that you have in your gift, Uncle Watkin? We were thinking that you might give him that, and then we could get married at once. You see, as a curate, Harold has had no scope. But slip him a vicarage, and there is no eminence to which that boy will not rise once he spits on his hands and starts in.
She wiggled with girlish enthusiasm. But there was no girlish enthusiasm in Sir Watkin Bassett. Well, there wouldn't be, of course, but what I mean is, there wasn't.
Ridiculous.
Why?
It's utterly out of the question. What means has he?
About 500 a year. Oh. 500's pretty good sugar, if you ask me. Besides, money doesn't matter.
It matters a great deal.
Oh, right-o. If you'd rather I married for money, Bertie, it's on.
What?
Wait a minute, I say, Tashie.
My dear child, you have completely misunderstood me. If you think your happiness lies in becoming the curate's wife, by all means, marry him. Oh, the alternative is too frightful to think.
What a man, what a man. Jeeves. Did he say it would work? He did. Was he right? He was. Bertie, could one kiss Jeeves?
Certainly not.
Well, shall I kiss you?
All I require from you, young Bing, is that notebook.
Well, I must kiss someone. And I'm dashed if I'm going to kiss Eustace Oates. Oh, Bertie, I exchanged a few words with him on the way in, and he was sinister to a degree. He's on my tail about that helmet.
What?
I'm suspect number one. He said that I had motive and opportunity. And as for clues, he had one of my gloves. Harold must have dropped it while snatching the helmet.
He would.
What do you mean? He would.
Well, he did, didn't he?
Well, that's not the same as saying he would. In a beastly, sneering, supercilious tone. He isn't half as pumpkin-headed as you are.
He is, at a conservative estimate, about 27 times as pumpkin-headed as me. He begins when I leave off.
Well, the point is, I've got to find a better spot for that helmet than my chest of drawers. Well, where do you think?
Oh, dash it, use your own judgment. Now, where is that notebook?
Oh, Bertie. You're going to laugh when I tell you.
Where is that book?
I hid it in the cow creamer.
But why?
Oh, I thought I would.
But how am I to get it?
Oh, dash it. Use your own judgment. Well, see you soon, Bertie.
At Stiffy's words, I became aware that the world had begun to turn black and flicker before me. No sooner did she biffed off when I became aware of a butler flickering before me.
Excuse me, sir. Miss Madeline desired me to say that she would be glad if you could spare her a moment in the dwarwing womb.
Righto, lead on. The sight of Madeline Bassett, seated at the piano, drooping on her stem a goodish deal, nearly caused me to turn and leg it. She stared at me for about half a minute, looking a bit like the Mona Lisa on one of those mornings when the sorrows of the world had been coming over the plate a bit too fast for her.
Bertie, I wanted to see you because I wanted to tell you. Bertie, my engagement to Augustus is at an end.
Yes, he told me.
I wanted to say...
Yes?
That I am willing...
Yes?
...to make you happy. I will be your wife, Bertie.
Awfully decent of you, you know, but... Have you thought? I mean, have you reflected?
After what happened this evening, when I saw with my own eyes...
But you haven't got the right angle. Let me explain.
No, Bertie, there is no explanation. Until tonight, I saw him only through the golden mist of love. Tonight, he revealed himself as what he really is. A satyr.
But that is just where you're making your bloomer, you see.
Please.
Righto.
I know you, Bertie. There are no lengths to which you will not go to help a friend, even at the cost of your own happiness. But I am through with Augustus. With you beside me, I shall, in time... exercise his spell. Well, now I suppose I'd better tell Daddy.
Oh, my aunt, don't do that. Old Bassett was still quivering to the roots of his soul at the thought of my marrying his niece. I wasn't fond of old Pop Bassett, but one has one's humane instincts.
But I must. He's expecting me to marry Augustus in 3 weeks.
Well, don't tell him tonight. Stiffy's just told him that she wants to marry the curate, and it's churned him up a good deal.
But if Stephanie loves Mr. Pinker, then she and Augustus aren't...
Exactly. That's the very point I've been trying to make. Give Bertram Wooster a good, clear story to unfold, and you find him at his best. I took her step by step through the whole affair of the lost notebook.
And you say Stephanie hid this notebook in Daddy's cow creamer?
Plum spang in the cow creamer.
But I never heard such an extraordinary story in my life.
Bizarre, yes, but you've got to consider the psychology of the individual. You may say you wouldn't have a psychology like Stiffy's if you were paid for it, but it's hers, all right.
Well, I suppose I'd better go look in the cow creamer.
She returned shortly, and empty-handed.
Bertie, there is absolutely nothing hidden in Daddy's cow creamer.